Come on! Come on! Come and get zombie takeout, baby! Come on, I don't got all day! Come on, come on! Come on, you bastard! Come on, you too! You want some zombie takeout?
What's up? Welcome to episode 312 of Zombie Takeout.
Zombie Takeout. And if the cops arrive while recording, you'll know why.
The Be Moving Cult Movie Podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto.
Yeah, we forgot to introduce ourselves last week because I went off on that 311 tangent.
We did 311? Jeez.
Because I made the 311 joke about, you know, it's not about the band. And yeah. We actually forgot to introduce ourselves because of that horrible joke. Before we get to this week's movie, we've got some listeners submitted. This is from Lush Bunny on YouTube. Yes, we actually got a comment on YouTube. She said, I always feel like somebody's watching me. Because last week was based on a song by Rockwell. And we have a voicemail from Bodo.
Howdy, guys. Boto here. Hey, I didn't listen to last week's show. You warned us if you were tired of politics not to listen, so I didn't listen. I know you're taking this next week off, but when you come back, you got to do an impromptu movie with Bill Paxton. He just died. Like, I got the update about an hour ago. So, like, Weird Science or whatever, Tombstone. I haven't looked back at your guys' history yet to see what you have done and haven't done of his. But rest in peace, Bill Paxton. We love you. Y'all have a good one now. You hear?
And that very nicely brings us to this week's movie, which isn't Weird Science or Tombstone, but it is, that's weird. I can't be right. That doesn't make any sense. Dude, what's in your notes for this week's movie?
It's 1987 Spaceballs. And that brings us to our impromptu plot summary, brought to you by Nose Jobs. Sometimes that's not the worst thing that could happen. All right, so we begin at the with King Roland and the planet Druidia, and his daughter is kidnapped, and he has to pay ransom for her, but he doesn't really want to because they're gonna drain the air out of the atmosphere.
This week's movie is Aliens. This week's movie is Aliens. This is not a joke. It's our Bill Paxton tribute.
Oh.
Of course, that brings us to the actual impromptu plot summary, sponsored by Space Marines, the beige of science fiction. Please don't use them in your next film, or novel, or video game, or comic, or anything, really.
And also brought to you by Bug Hunts. Sometimes, that's not the worst thing that could happen.
Hmm.
Alright, so, but, I mean, come on. These are the OG Space Marines.
This happens. In terms of movies, yes. But they were in novels long before this.
I guess so. Starship Troopers. Mm.
Some Jerry Pournelle stuff, Martin Niven, you know. They were around for a long time before this movie. But yeah, I can't think of any before this movie.
Yeah, where we finally got to see them kick ass. But so we have these Marines who are... actually, we had a lot of stuff that happened before the Marines. Mm-hmm. Really, the movie should start when we have a bunch of Marines and they've got this mysterious visitor, you know, Ripley, who saw some crazy shit. But instead, we actually begin with this whole long story of why we're having a sequel. they find Ripley's spaceship from left, you know, they're in stasis since
57 years, I think.
Since 1979, 57 years earlier.
Is this the first time we've done a sequel without doing the original?
I'm sure we have done something like this before. But, I mean, nothing this iconic, of
Maybe
course.
Maybe we'll do all four Alien movies out of order.
Yeah, but this is, of course, because of it is our Bill Paxton tribute.
Right.
So we have all of this, you know, is she crazy? Did she imagine this all, you know, this whole thing? Did she have to blow things up? You know, was this creature that tormented her going to come back and get her? She had nightmares. She eventually trusts one of her two dads to go on to this. What?
Nice reference.
Thank you. Why could they've gotten BJ and the Bear for this? But anyway, he eventually talks her into this, which why she would trust this dude, I do not know. Mm-hmm. And there's so many points where a normal, rational person would be like, fuck you. I'm not going in there. But she goes into there each time. Like, you're not going to get me back up into space. You know, I think I'll go back to this colony.
Just when she thought she was out, they pulled her back in.
Well, that's the thing. There's no logical reason why she could have gone back into this, which would have made it better if they just didn't show that at all. Mm. Just had her on board, you know, Willard along for the mission, you know, because this is, you know, kind of a Vietnam story set in space.
Well, it's a war movie. It's what that was the intention. The first one was a horror film. This is a war film.
Right. So I guess they didn't want to mirror Apocalypse Now too closely. Mm-hmm. But that's really what they were going for. Yeah. You know, there's the guy that's seen all the shit. Mm-hmm. There's the crew that's all cocky. And then shit goes sideways. Hilarity ensues. But anyway, so here's the diagram. Of course, there is a ton of aliens on this planet still. Why they took 57 years to really finally get the population, you know, to attack the population is probably the largest plot hole in this entire thing, really. But other than that, They send the distress signal. They have to get Ripley to come and join them since she's a consultant and an expert on these creatures. And yeah, shit goes sideways. One of her two dads, you know, betrays them, and hilarity ensues. Mm-hmm. I had it right the first time.
Yeah. I almost forgot that James Cameron used to make good movies. You know, this Terminator. Arguably Titanic, a lot of people love it. I've actually never seen it in its entirety, so I can't really say.
It is really tough to sit through that thing in its entirety. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever done it in one sitting. I've done it in several sittings. Mm-hmm. You know, caught it in places.
And, I was just too tired of the damn song to even give the movie a chance. But I know a lot of people love it. And Terminator was great, both the first two Terminators. I kind of like the third, actually. And this is great. So,
spoiler. Cameron is the poster child for someone who needs an editor.
Yeah.
I mean, this should not have been 2.5 hours.
Yeah, agreed.
Like, wait a minute. You know, I didn't even check. Did I see some sort of director's cut that it was 2.5 hours, or is that the regular time?
Yeah, it doesn't really pick up until you see the first real chest burster, because the first one you see is in a dream.
Yeah.
That really was too obvious that it was a dream, because it's Ripley and you know she's going to survive the movie, or at least survive most of it. If you don't, you know, if you're not sure she's going to live through the whole thing.
Well, you could have thought that maybe they didn't have her. They were just having her for a cameo to set it up.
Fair point. But I'd imagine she was in a lot of the trailers that showed more than just those first like 10 minutes.
That's true. Yeah, I have running time is 2 hours and 17. I'm trying to remember
how. Oh, I must have had a director's cut then, because mine was like 2:35.
Yeah, I think mine was too, which is just, geez, no, there's no reason for this to be 2.5.
No, and it's really just the beginning that I could have done without.
Of course, and I think that was in the original, a lot of that stuff.
I also forgot that Paul Reiser was tolerable before Mad About You.
Well, he was just a stand-up comedian, I think, at one point. I mean,
well, I think, was this before or after My Two Dads?
This is before.
This is before. Then he might have just come straight from stand-up to this, then.
Yeah, I think so. That's why it was kind of weird. Like, wait a minute, they put the comic in?
In a fairly dramatic role.
Yeah.
And it worked somehow. Also, this movie really borrowed from A New Hope in a couple of scenes.
Oh, well, yeah. Of course.
There's a scene where Ripley's pod gets picked up, which was very Tantive into the Imperial Star Destroyer. And Newt falling through the chute into, in an unintentional rhyme there, sorry, into the water. It was the trash compactor scene.
Yeah.
But though I think it was also an influence on Evil Dead 2. Because Evil Dead 2 was a year after this.
I was thinking about that with the hand.
Well, the scene where she puts the weapons together, where she's taping the guns together, and they go to the tight shot on her face, and it's identical to Ash lashing the chainsaw to his hand or his arm.
I was thinking more of the smaller alien crawling around the lab and her trying to shoot it.
Okay,
was very similar to him trying to shoot his hand, his hand, crawling around the house, which of course just fucking.
And since they were aiming for a year later, and this was pretty big, I'm wondering if Raimi was referencing this in those two scenes.
He definitely had to have been.
Yeah.
But how absurd! I mean, he's shooting his own hand.
Yeah. I never realized it was a reference to this, and this is not the first time I've seen Aliens. Of course, I just never made that connection before.
I can't remember the last time I've watched this one, but it was definitely a pleasure to watch again.
Okay. I particularly got a kick out of the old school computer paper.
Yes.
31 years later, knowing that stuff went the way of the dodo, 5 years after this movie was made?
Something like that, yeah.
I did get a kick out of that. And Ripley's daughter looked a lot older than 66. I think it was the director's mother or somebody on the crew's mother, maybe a producer, in the photo. She looked like she was in her mid-70s, but apparently she was 66.
I mean, are they saying that picture quality in the future is really going to be that bad, where it's so pixelated?
Yeah. Though the scene on the base, the first scene with the terraforming base on LV-426, or Acheron, is it called?
Oh, I can't remember.
Yeah. I liked how lived in and realistic that was.
Yeah.
They didn't try to go high science fiction at all. It was a factory. Pretty much.
Well, right. I mean, an outpost is going to be an outpost.
Yeah, exactly.
We may have all this wonderful technology on Earth, but I mean, getting all the shit out there might be another story, and things going to break down too.
And I like that Cameron thought of that. Of course, it had to be a family with two kids who found the alien ship, and went in to investigate it with the kids waiting in the truck.
I mean, that might have been a better opener than them finding the ship, the old ship.
Yeah, they could work that into the dialogue of Ripley's backstory and all.
There's so much. They could easily work the backstory in. And is it really that important why she went, back out there? I mean, she could just have been...
Well, I mean, the part where they picked her up 57 years later and her daughter was dead, they could have worked that in.
Because
you need to know about the daughter to get her attachment to Newt.
I don't know. I mean, it's a kid,
Yeah, fair point. I think knowing that she just found out her daughter died adds to that, though.
I think they were just trying to give her more meat to work on, for the role.
Yeah. And actually, you very nicely just set up the first of my very minor criticisms of the film. Sigourney Weaver really chews the scenery. I mean, it's entertaining, but she really went operatic on this one.
This was her big break, really. I mean, I think she did Year of Living Dangerously before this, but I mean, she had some bit parts here and there. This was
the first Alien.
But yeah. But that was 7 years before this.
True. Oh, and nice coincidence. Not only is this our Bill Paxton tribute, but we began recording this episode on International Women's Day, and Ripley is like the preeminent female badass in movie history.
Right.
That was convenient.
This was 2 years after Ghostbusters.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Which, I mean, she was a supporting player, she was like fourth. I mean,
after the three main leads,
right? She was above Ernie Hudson, which I mean, I love Ernie Hudson,
it wasn't exactly high billing,
right? In fact, you kind of even forget she was in the movie,
Yeah.
If you don't think of like the end where, you know, she got possessed and all that.
Yeah. I mostly think of, was it Ivan or the guy in the painting?
Oh, the second one.
Oh, she was in the first one, right?
Mm-hmm.
I get them confused sometimes. I have a difficulty separating the first two Ghostbusters.
Pretty similar stories.
Yeah. Back to Aliens, and a bit of a contrast from my criticism, minor criticism of Sigourney Weaver's acting. Lance Henriksen was fucking brilliant as Bishop.
I mean, I liked Sigourney Weaver's performance in this. I think maybe they gave her too much to do in this.
Maybe.
Like, the whole thing about the backstory with the kid and everything was just like, dude, you're making an action movie. Do you remember what kind of movie you're making here? Did Stallone be in his movies with, I lost my daughter. What am I going to do?
And when it got into the more intense scene, she was fine. I think she just overdid it on the mellower scenes.
Yeah.
In the beginning, particularly. Lance Henriksen as Bishop the Android, though, was brilliant.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's just the right amount of creepy.
He's no Brett Spiner, but, you know.
This was a little, was this the same year or just a little bit before? A
couple years before that.
A couple years before.
Yeah.
But yeah, he basically was kind of Data, but creepy. Which was a great head fake, because you expected him to be the villain, because Ash was the villain in the first one, the android.
Right. They did set it up that he was, he was going to, you know, take her out somehow.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, onto the guest of honor, so to speak. If Hudson was supposed to be annoying, he did a great job.
His character arc,
yeah,
just steals this movie. Honestly,
yeah, absolutely.
We couldn't have picked a more perfect tribute. We've fucked up with our tribute choices in the past
quite a few times. This was a perfect choice, and I really just picked this because it was an excuse to review Aliens. It was a convenience. It turned out to be a really good choice for Bill Paxton.
He's a bit player in this. Mm-hmm. Kyle Reese, the dude that was Kyle Reese from Terminator,
Michael
is
Bean.
Supposed to be the you know, the big...
Yeah, the male lead.
You know,
and I really could have done without the flirting.
But it's Bill Paxton going from just completely overconfident asshole to... Holy fuck, we are in over our heads. You know, the whole thing that Dana Carvey made famous, of course.
And he did a great job with the traumatized part.
And then to just going to his ultimate, you know, badass mass murderer of his, I'm just going to fuck every one of you up in here.
The character, even when he was traumatized or badass, he always kind of annoyed me, but I think that was intentional.
Yes.
And I think that's just where Paxton took the character. He decided to make him a bit of a douchebag.
I just expect to hear Martin Sheen's, you know, voiceover. Yeah, they were, you know, rock and rollers with one foot in their grave, grave, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he is just this, his death scene in this has to be one of my favorite death scenes in movie history.
And just to tell the audience, because we were talking about this beforehand, I actually missed that scene the first time because it's a battle scene. I get bored with that sort of thing. So I went, you know, I was listening to it, but I had my browser up. I was checking Twitter, and I come back and suddenly Hudson's gone. And 10 minutes later, I'm like, wait, what happened to Hudson?
But
I had to go back and watch his death scene again. And it was brilliant.
Is the problem with most battle scenes in movies is that, you know, nothing's going to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, all the main characters are going to be okay.
Right.
But in this case, that not only was that not true, Paxton fucking sells it.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it's just knowing that he was going down, but just determined to take out as many as humanly possible before going down with them.
And they didn't telegraph it at all, like they did with Vasquez. Like, with her scene, you know, she's staying behind to give them cover fire, and you knew she was going to die.
Oh, you know what? You knew she was dead. I assumed that the alien was going to gestate inside of her, you know, when she got picked up the first time.
Oh, right.
So, I mean, you knew she was a goner, like, way early on. It was ridiculous. It was almost hot shots ridiculous with dead meat.
I didn't expect the other guy, what was his name, who died with her. Gorman. I didn't expect him to go back and like try to cover her and, you know, have them both end
up dying. Yeah, his heroic death was kind of surprising because, you know, I mean, he'd been such a fuck up through this whole thing.
And he wasn't really that noticeable of a character.
No. In fact, you kind of wonder why they didn't just give him the death scene where early on and just have no leader there.
And a noticeable character is kind of relative in this one because you have Sigourney Weaver chewing the scenery. You've got a comedian in a dramatic role and you've got Paxton just hitting it out of the park. You know, it's hard for anybody else to really get noticed. And Lance Henriksen just being, you know, beautifully creepy.
And the kid just being too quiet.
Yeah. And she was really good. It's kind of a shame that she didn't do any acting after this. She went into teaching. This is her only film role.
I noticed that. I was wondering, like, oh, man. I guess, yeah, she could have grown up into a great actress. But it is not for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Now, I was a bit surprised when Ripley didn't recognize the alien redecoration in the base. I mean, they're going through the base and you start to see, you know, the classic eager, you know, kind of biomechanical alien look. And Ripley said she hadn't seen it before. Did she not see that in the first movie? It's been way too long since I've seen the first one.
You know, I don't think there was only one alien in the first one.
And she wasn't on the planet, so maybe she didn't see that stuff.
Right. It was really just the shit that went down on the ship with the one creature trying to take over.
Yeah.
Or I guess, you know, trying to lay eggs.
Oh, also, I just noticed in my notes, I said it was like the first 10 minutes that were boring. It's the first half.
I was going to say, really.
Until that first real chest burster, until shit got real. That was the second half of the movie, practically.
They could easily cut off the first.
Yeah, they could have cut like 45 minutes.
I mean, the whole time with her on Earth was really just unnecessary.
Yeah, yeah.
The reluctance to go back. Mm-hmm. I mean, they could have made her character, you know, Captain Ahab.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which would have been more fitting.
Yeah.
Like, not that, you know, I'm safe now. It's, oh, those things are still out there? Well, I'm going to fucking go back and get them.
And she kind of turned into that, but she could have just started that way, give us some flashbacks about getting picked up and the bit with the daughter. And, you know, just keep it interesting.
In fact, it would have been a lot more interesting if she was determined to get back into space and they were preventing her from being too much of a head case.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the whole thing of like 57 years, I mean, they imply that there were some attacks and they knew about the creature, of course, and they were doing research. But 57 years before keeping that a secret.
Just because one family was sent out to the ship and disturbed them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like apparently they were perfectly fine to stay in the ship. They didn't bother with the base until this one family walked in.
Right. Like, why would they have left that base go for 57 years?
Mm-hmm.
It just didn't make any sense.
No. Oh, another possible influence that this film may have had. The troop transport looked a lot like Nolan's Batmobile.
Yes. Yes, I was thinking it's got this Batmobile.
And particularly Nolan's, because it's practically a tank. You know, they didn't do any of the nice rounded lines like the older ones did. And it was the scene where they were just tearing through the base, you know, where she saved them. That I just couldn't help but think Batmobile.
But none of that made any sense, them going in. Think about this, you know, say you're going on this mission of a recon mission to find out what happened to some people. You know, you're not getting anything from information from the base. Mm. They're not responding. They're not sending any messages. You go to the planet. You find the base has power. Well, wait a minute. The base has power. Why is no one responding still?
Yeah.
So that's your first tip off. Like, let's see what's going on before we go inside. Then the next thing, they've got the troops going in with the cameras. I mean, and then when the lieutenant's like, the area's secure.
Yeah.
Ripley should have just said, fuck you, I'm going.
Especially when you walk in and, you know, there are holes in the ceiling and wires are strewn all over the place. Shit went down.
Right, yeah, she's seeing this stuff on their camera, and the lieutenant's just like, oh, area secure, let's go in. Yeah, and she said, fuck you, and rolled the credits.
Yeah.
You know, the ship flying back out.
How it should have ended.
Yeah, that's exactly how it should have ended.
Now, the terraforming on LV... LV-426 must have been pretty far along, because they were actually able to walk around outside.
Yeah.
Without exposure suits, I should say. You know, just right. Breathing the air. The base was completely self-contained, as you would expect a terraforming base to be. But then they're walking around outside on the planet without suits.
I mean, a sponsor could have been terraforming when you want to save money on spacesuits.
Yeah.
And miking.
Although, how did the xenomorph get on the shuttle that was picking them up?
Didn't they show it get crawling in?
I missed it, if they did.
Yeah, I think it did. They were...
Because that came from the main ship that they got there on. It didn't come from planetside.
You just saw some, like, slime where it had obviously it through the bay.
All right. How did it get onto the ship?
Well, it showed... When he was getting in, it showed the slime that was behind him.
But the ship came from Earth, went into orbit over LV-426, never landed. That's where that shuttle...
I think it did.
Oh, that's the shuttle that dropped them in the first place.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, got it.
Yeah, they had landed on some other part, but...
Okay, so it got in there. Okay, that makes sense. I just suddenly there was this alien showing up on a ship that I don't remember really touching down on LV-426.
Yeah, and they like I said, they showed the slime where it had entered before you saw the alien. It was tipping off to the audience that they are not alone.
Right.
And they're going to die.
Yeah.
And I love how they die in front of them. Like, oh, there's the rescue ship. There goes the rescue ship.
Yeah. Oh, some trivia about Bill Paxton that I forgot to mention earlier. Most of his lines were improvised, including the iconic Game Over Man, Game Over. One of the most iconic lines in science fiction, possibly one of the most iconic lines in film history. The one that defined his career, he improvised it. Love that. And a lot of his lines. So that arc really was his.
Yeah.
Was more his than Cameron's, really.
Well, it is the first time, I think, you see a guy, like, who's supposed to be, you know, in charge and in control of everything, just completely lose his shit.
Right, right.
In the face of danger.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I guess you kind of see that in some war movies. Mm-hmm.
Well,
but
you
not
have,
to this
and then
degree.
That's what they were playing on completely.
Not to this degree.
Yeah, they took it, Paxton, I'm going to give Paxton the credit. He took it way further.
I mean, Apocalypse Now had the guy freak out because of he almost got eaten by the tiger and all that. But, you know, you can understand that.
Well, that and also most war films do it for one or two scenes. And then they slap some sense into them. Hudson lost his shit for like a third of the movie.
Yes. Yeah, he
But he still functioned.
Trouble dealing.
Yeah.
Just like, just get us out of here. What are you talking about? Just go home, man. Yeah.
Also, the knife trick scene earlier, before they get there. According to Lance Henriksen, the adding of Hudson's hand to that trick was discussed with almost everyone except Paxton. He had no idea what was going to happen. So when Henriksen put his hand under his and started throwing the knife around, that was real fear.
But he's an android. He's not going to miss.
Yeah.
Well, or did he miss anyway?
He missed. He hit himself. That's why he bled. That's how Ripley found out he was an android.
Exactly. How could the android miss?
That's a good question.
A shitty android.
How could he not know there was an alien queen behind him?
Yeah. Looks like he had some indigestion of some sort.
Mm. Also, the wrist locator was nicely quaint. At one point, Hicks gives Ripley this like wristwatch looking thing. Very 80s looking wristwatch with Velcro. And it's apparently supposed to be a beacon, a locator.
Was there a calculator on it?
Looked like it. There should be.
Oh.
You know, these days it would be a chip. So in 2070, whatever this is set in, you would definitely get chipped or something even less invasive. And when did Ripley start smoking? We ran into this in another movie recently where a character just suddenly started smoking.
Yeah, I think it was Bitter Moon.
Okay. She's smoking in one scene. We never see her smoking before then.
Or no, it was Secretary.
Okay, yeah. She's just suddenly smoking a cigarette in this one scene where they're talking about the alien. I think Sigourney Weaver just needed a bit of business. Maybe she smoked at the time. And there's no precursor to it. You know, they don't establish it at any other point. It would make sense if she started smoking after, you know, finding her daughter's dead and, you know, spending 57 years in space. It's a perfectly reasonable time to start smoking. But introducing it midway through the movie, if not after the midpoint, seemed odd. I really liked the animatronic facehuggers in the med lab.
What?
The animatronic facehuggers that attacked them in the med lab.
Oh, okay.
Those looked so good. Like, those would sell today in a movie.
Not
let alone 30 years ago.
I think a lot of this was practical.
Yeah.
I mean, that's of course the point, you know? Mm-hmm. Not, you know, no CGI.
Although the xenomorphs did seem to be easier in this one than in the last one. Because they're mowing them down with guns, and Ripley had to space one in the last movie to get rid of it.
You'd think the guns had a bit more firepower to them, though.
Than anything she had in the first one, yeah.
Yeah. Being space marines and all.
Mm-hmm. Because in the first one, they pretty much sell it as unkillable, which is why she has to space it.
Yeah.
Now, the one effect that I thought was a little iffy, the egg tube.
Oh.
But you see the alien queen toward the end, and she's laying some eggs. And she's this giant animatronic alien. Most of her looked great. Except the egg tubes were obviously, like, fabric. It was silk or something. Or nylon. It
didn't make any sense that they could just be detached like that either.
Mm-hmm.
What was that?
Also, the green screen behind Weaver during the climax was obviously a green screen. When the whole base is blowing up and she's standing there on the rail before she gets saved, it's obviously a green screen. I mean, you know it's a green screen, of course, but they could have made it a little bit more, it fit in a bit better.
Could they have an 86?
There had to have been green screen scenes earlier that didn't seem that obvious, but maybe not.
Of course, green screen had been around for a while. Yeah. You know, Lucas was using some of it.
It was around long before that.
All of Superman movies were just, you know,
right.
The green screen.
It's one of the oldest effects tricks, you know, chroma key.
Yeah.
So, it just stuck out. And of course, we got to call out, because we always do, this observes Chekhov's gun. There's this big robotic loader that about midway through the movie, actually before the midpoint when they're still on the ship on the way to LV-426, that Ripley points out that she can control. She knows how to use.
If it's not a weapon, though, is it really?
She used it to take out the alien.
Well, right. She used this thing as a weapon. It's supposed to be this industrial, you know.
Yeah. It's basically a forklift.
Yeah.
It's basically a futuristic forklift. That's an exoskeleton that you used to lift things with.
Right. You knew it was, of course, going to be used later.
Well, yeah. They introduced it just before the halfway point that Ripley knows how to use it, and she demonstrates it a bit. And you know, of course, she's going to use it to kill an alien later in the movie. I just like it when they do that, because, you know, it's Chekhov's gun.
It's a... Because it's not a weapon.
Well, it was used as a weapon.
But it's something so cool that you knew it was going to come back.
Mm-hmm. And this has to have the best last 10 minutes of any movie.
Oh, when you're talking like a nuclear explosion.
Yeah, because you think they're out, and then they go back in, and shit just hits the wall. It just gets completely insane. And there's like, 10 seconds of denouement?
Yeah.
They waste no time at the end. Right. All the time is wasted in the first half.
After setting up for, an hour? That's over. And just how thick was she that Burke was trying to kill her?
Well, she means she should have noticed it earlier?
Well, I mean, shouldn't she have thought of, like, locking him up, throwing him in some sort of rig before this?
Before he tried to kill her with the facehugger? I don't know if she would have had an excuse. She certainly didn't trust him, which is why she knew that he'd done that.
And then when, yeah, he tried to kill her, that, you know, they were playing it off like it may have been an accident still. When she, before she went to sleep, she had the gun on top of the bed.
When the she, in the room with Newt?
Yes.
There was a gun?
Yes.
I didn't even notice that.
She put the gun on the bed.
Okay.
When she woke up, the gun was moved outside of the lab.
Was it?
Also, well, yes.
Well, because she pushed the bed over to get away to kind of block the facehugger. Maybe she forgot the gun was there, which would be understandable.
First thing she did was reach for the gun. It was gone.
Oh.
She looks out the window and it's, you know, it's been moved outside the room.
So apparently in the 5 seconds she was under the bed with Newt before the facehugger showed up, someone slipped in and took the gun.
Well, she fell asleep.
Oh, yeah, she was asleep. She was out for a while. It was only five seconds of the movie, but yeah, probably was longer.
So while she was asleep, he, you know, takes the gun, mm-hmm. drops the facehugger in the room,
right.
and closes the door. And then, to compound that, he shut the camera off.
Uh-huh. Right, yeah.
How many more clues do you need to have mm-hmm. to be like, this motherfucker can't be trusted with anything.
Well, that's when she really went off on him and said, you tried to kill me after the incident with the facehugger.
Yeah.
She knew.
They didn't do anything about it.
Well, no, the others didn't know or didn't trust her. I don't know. It was a whole thing with, you know, not trusting Ripley in this movie.
And the thing was, they threw the next alien attack in at them and then they just forgot about it.
Right.
And,
right.
You know.
And of course, he got his comeuppance because that's what happens in these kind of movies.
Yeah. And, you know, he goes with BJ and
mm-hmm. yeah.
has a daughter with them. Man, the 80s were weird.
Yeah. Couple more pieces of trivia about Paxton. Now, when he passed away, a lot of people were talking about how nice he was. He apparently was a very nice guy. He had 18 of the 25 fucks in this movie. And he was continuously apologizing to Carrie Henn, who played Newt, throughout filming every time he had to swear in front of her. She later admitted that she didn't mind mainly because she didn't know what any of the words meant.
Okay.
Well, she looked about, what, 10 in this movie?
Something like that.
How could she not know those words at 10? She must have been a very sheltered child. I knew those words at 10.
Do you swear? No, but I know all the words.
On to sequels and remakes?
On to sequels and what kind of sequel could they have for this?
Of course, this is the sequel to 1979's Alien, and it was followed by two more direct sequels, 92's Aliens 3 and 97's Alien Resurrection. A fifth film is currently in development hell. can't remember who signed on to direct offhand, but it's unlikely that it's going to happen at this point. 2012's Prometheus is a prequel to Alien, as will be this year's Alien Covenant, which I don't know. I mean, given Prometheus, I don't think I want to bother with Alien Covenant.
I thought I've heard that there's going to be like an alien every couple of years, pretty much.
Well, there's Alien Covenant this year. Alien 5, which I think was the working title, is in development hell, unlikely. Those are the only ones I've heard about.
I don't know if that was a joke, but someone was saying that...
It might have been a joke because of what Disney did with Avengers and with the Marvel Universe and Star Wars now.
Star Wars. The six-month Star mm-hmm. Wars.
Yeah. There are also two Alien vs. Predators movies. I kind of liked the first one. Never bothered with the second one. And lots of other media, novels, comics, video games, which hence my rant in the beginning about Space Marines. On to brains.
The Marines in space. On to brains.
I really liked it. There were some issues, some overacting, some questionable writing. Of course, that first half. I'm still going to go 4.5, though.
I had no problem with the acting. The editor in the house. Is there an editor in the house? Please, someone shave at least 45 minutes off this movie. Maybe half hour to 45 minutes. But you've got to see it, though. I mean, just for fucking Paxton and just the effects and the fighting. It's fight scenes that don't bore you.
Right.
I'm going 4 brains.
All right. And what have you learned?
That queen's vagina must have been so exhausted. She was fucking cranking out eggs.
And I learned that maybe androids aren't so bad after all.
Do they dream electric sheep?
Hmm. All right, so until next time, and we'll be reviewing, finally, hopefully, Classic Nukem High. That was going to be our second movie of the year.
This is 16 all over again, isn't it? Where we're just like, okay, all right, another tribute.
Well, there's only been 2 tribute episodes this year.
Yeah.
The rest were just random other shit that we crowbarred in.
Impromptu BDSM trilogy. Yeah.
Well, 50 Shades was on the list, and you thought of Secretary. So.
And you gotta have a sequel.
All right, so until then, go to zombietakeout.com, check out the album art, the episode description, of course the episode itself, which you're already listening to, links to find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google Plus, and YouTube, links to subscribe via RSS and iTunes. Please leave us a rating and a review on iTunes, we'd really appreciate it. And if you enjoy the show, give us a little word of mouth, spread the word. Of course, we appreciate all of the listeners we have, but where would we be better? Of course, you'll find the movie list, every movie we've reviewed so far, and every movie we're going to review, up through Beastmaster. Again, don't remember the number. I think it might be like 320 or something.
We're almost to the end of the year at this point.
Mm-hmm. And the request form, if you've got a movie you'd like to hear us review, please leave it on the request form. And of course, the recommendations list. I was pretty sure going in that this would be on the rec list.
I was confident too. It's just, I mean, I watched the hell out of this late 80s.
Yeah.
And then in the 90s, maybe not as much, but I'm glad that I've come back.
After almost 8 years of doing this show, even if we're reviewing a movie I know I like, it's still kind of a chore to watch it, and it's still kind of a pain in the ass. This week, I was actually looking forward to watching the movie. I don't remember the last time that happened. Maybe Primer.
As long as this was, I actually was able to do it in one sitting. It was very easy to do in one sitting, too, despite being 2.5 hours.
And back to Bill Paxton. We've bagged on him a lot, particularly when we reviewed Slipstream. But I do have to recommend Big Love, a series he did, I think, on Showtime a few years ago.
Yes.
Some of his best work.
Yeah.
Of course, you can email us, zombietakeout@gmail.com, or leave us a voicemail at 414-368-ZT01, or for the Alphanumerico Challenge, 414-368-9861. Of course, you will always be calling from the middle of Milwaukee. And until next time, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
And that brings us very nicely to this week's movie. It's not Weird Science or Tombstone, but it is...
It's the 1987 food film.
No, hold up.
Spaceballs.
I want to do the whole Warren Beatty thing first.
Oh.
Wait till I throw to you. Because I'm going to verbally do what he did where he showed her the card.
Oh, okay.
And that brings us to this week's movie, which isn't Weird Science or Tombstone, but it is... I'll wait till I say, dude, what's in your notes?
Okay.
That's your cue.